Blog Talk Radio.
Recently, in the news, we have had a lot of famous men being accused of sexual misconduct. It started, I believe, with Harvey Weinstein, and 51 other men or more have been accused and quickly lost their sense of fame, their power, their jobs. The women are now coming forward, and their sexual abuse at the hands of these men years ago are now truly claiming their sexual sovereignty. And I can say personally that every woman that I have spoken to has had her own experience of some form of sexual harassment over the years at work or in some other capacity. So the question is, are you, as a woman, if you're a woman, claiming your right, the right to control your own sexual and physical faith, not being subject to the demands, the whims, and the control or the perversion of others? And of course, there are men that have been victims of this. But right now, we're talking about all these women that have suffered for years. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, love mentor and relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the Healing Through Love program. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and way beyond. Dr. Saida Desilets wants to live in a world filled with audacious, sexually sovereign women living life on their own terms. As a thought leader and body philosopher, she has published several books, The Emergence of the Sensual Woman and The Illustrious Jade Egg, and her innovative method featured in Dr. Christiane Northrup's best-selling books, Women's Wisdom, Women's Bodies, and the Secret Pleasures of Menopause, as well as in Dr. Rachel Abrams' books, Multi-Orgasmic Women and Body Wise. After a violent rape that nearly cost Saida her life and 2 decades of dedicated, she is a visionary spokesperson for sexual sovereignty, a world where physical and psychological oppression are no more. So I am delighted to welcome you, and I look forward to speaking with you today, Saida Desilets. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Erica. It's such a pleasure to be here, and everything you were saying about what your passion is quite a turn-on. I think that's fabulous, and I'm very excited to be here.
And it's funny that I just spoke to someone yesterday and asked, she said she needed a speaker because there's someone who was talking about, I mentioned someone that I had interviewed talking about she was abused by someone from the internet, you know, lost a lot of money. So I asked this person, are you interested in someone talking about love? And she said, oh, no, you know, these people are over 50. And I just laughed that we all need love. And and people are more interested in the negative stuff than in learning how to love. So with that, I can't wait to hear your background and training and what has led you to get so involved with women and their transformation and sovereignty? And I'd love you to explain that word.
Yes, let's first explain that word and then I'll share a little background. So sovereignty, in its basic English, in my idea of it anyways, it means authority and autonomy. So imagine having the full authority, full autonomy over your own body, over your pleasure, your fertility, and anything that has to do with your sensuality and your sexuality and your body. So that's what sexual sovereignty implies. I chose to add the word sexual because in our culture, if I were to say body sovereignty, a large portion of us would exclude sexuality, and it's a huge and very important part of being a human being. So that's why I've included sexual sovereignty in that choice of words. And it's very significant for me. These words came to me after over a couple of decades working with women and observing what I would call a reclamation cycle, a reclamation experience, where there was transformation of a past trauma or a past experience, or maybe they had a difficult birth. And then there was this reclamation of their bodies, of their hearts, of their spirits in such a profound way that suddenly I realized, my goodness, these women are stepping and really owning and claiming all of themselves in that sovereignty.
Hmm. Wow, it's beautiful. So tell us how you got to all of this, how you got interested in it.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually my interest started when I was a child. I grew up on First Nation reservations in Canada. And if you've never been to a reservation, it's quite a different way of living, especially when you're an outsider. So I was the only white kid, and I spoke French. It was my only language at the time. I had to learn how to speak Ojibwe. And what happens in these reservations, because there's a lot of alcohol abuse and oppression, is there is a lot of domestic violence and sexual abuse and incest. So I was a witness to those things at a very young age. At the same time, Erica, this is what's amazing. At the same time, I brought forward my own love of my body, and I would share with my girlfriends. We were only 5 years old, so very innocent. But I would share with them, oh my God, I found this great spot on my body and it feels so good when I touch it. You should see if you have the same thing. And so
that's funny.
In my young life, I was like, this is great. Oh my God, look, I just do this and I feel amazing. And so I kind of wanted everyone to know about it, but I also understood that probably just something to share with my friends. And I got in a lot of trouble for it. And I actually remember that moment very clearly because it was an older sister, it was a teenage girl who found us all, this little cluster of five-year-olds in a basement exploring our bodies together. And she just thought I was the devil's spawn. She grabbed me and threw me out of the house, and she was so angry. And I remember Erica saying to myself, huh, I don't think she found the spot, because if she did, she wouldn't be this angry.
That's a funny story.
Right?
But it wasn't so funny
you.
At that time.
No, but at the same time, you can see the character, the spirit of my being, that even though there was a culture of difficulty and a culture of shame and a culture of pain, somehow my own orientation to my body had the prevalent space in my psyche. So that was important. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward many years later, where I had a near-death, very violent rape experience, and waking up from a surgery that came post the rape experience, and I was told I had 2 weeks to live. That moment right there woke me up in a very massive way, because when you're 20 years old, you don't think about dying. It's not on your mind. And so suddenly your mortality, you know, my mortality was offered. It's like, here it is. You've got 2 weeks. What are you going to do with these 2 weeks? And that was a turning point for me. And I chose to defy my surgeon. I chose to really defy a lot of things in that moment. And I chose life. And so what brought me to this work, what makes me such a very passionate lover of women and how powerful we are, how courageous we are, and how incredible we are that we can actually take our greatest wounds and transform them into points of power. because I've done it for myself. I've witnessed it with so many women across the globe. It's clear to me that this is part of our spirit as awake women. So that's a little bit how it began, was just myself taking myself through a full reclamation journey, a full transformation, entering a state of deep as each step unfolded, because really, honestly, we don't know what's coming, right? We, you know, these moments are very shocking, and it's very hard to go, okay, I'm going to do this, and then heal, and I'll be complete. That's not how it works. How healing works is the next step, you know, shows itself, and then the next step shows itself. So what I ended up doing through my own healing was developing a method, and that method I tested when I did my PhD, and now that method is being taught to other professionals around the globe. And this method is so powerful. It's a psychosexual method, and that's how it developed. It came from a very true place of great need. I was facing death, and then it got to my own delight, serve others, which is even better.
And what's amazing to me is I am hearing stories somewhat like this over and over again among people who are masters at teaching spiritual concepts or how to be a success in life, that they had to face something really intense that shifted them. And you have a choice in that moment to go into this poor me and give yourself over to the medical system or whatever else you're dealing with, or you can take a stand for yourself. And you did that.
Absolutely.
A stand for something higher, for life, you said.
Exactly. And you know what? I don't feel like we have to put ourselves into great moments of intense trauma in order to choose that. So that's what I want to say, is that sexual sovereignty is for everyone. It's a human birthright. Whether you're a man, woman, child, this is your right. If you've had anything that's happened in your life, maybe you had a great life and you've never had trauma, but you live in a world that has made sexuality a commodity. You live in a world where we're afraid of claiming our body space and having boundaries and speaking up. So in that world that we live in, even if we've had no trauma, we have the invitation, as you were just saying, to step out of any kind of victim orientation, to claim our sovereignty, and start to really create our life from that place. That's a very exciting choice that every one of us gets to make.
And I have also found through my body work, where you work with someone like, maybe they have a sprained ankle, but they don't pay attention to it, and next thing they break their leg. It's like, if you're not paying attention in those moments to honor yourself, the message can get bigger and you can have a more traumatic experience until you finally are willing to stand up for yourself and your rights.
Yes. And here's what's exciting, Erica, is that the Me Too movement was only the beginning. We're now in the Now What movement. We've moved, you know, we found collectively, we have now understood that it's okay to use our voice. It's not only okay, it's important to use the voice in such a way that we come forward with our truth and that there's accountability and we're working with systems to make that really powerful. And now we've entered the stage of what I call that initiation, that invitation of our lives, so that we all can find our voices in all moments. It's not that easy sometimes. Maybe you're at work and something, it's not like traumatic, but it's actually disrespectful of your space. But maybe you don't say anything because you don't want to be, you know, labeled as a bitchy person or a whatever. But that's also important. That's part of the Me Too as well. It's like, let's learn to use the voice, have clear boundaries, and then from this healthy space, what do we want to create? And that's the invitation that we're all receiving right now is now what?
And what you just said, that you don't want to appear bitchy, what happens if you speak up for yourself in the moment when it's a small moment, it doesn't come across so bitchy. It comes across very clear. But if you don't speak up several times, then it comes out angry and intense.
Exactly. So the first thing we want to look at, Erica, I think, is as a collective, is how did we create a society where we felt we couldn't speak up, where we felt that somehow the violation of our own bodies is okay, and that we, you know, by saying something, we would lose, you know, our lives or our workplace or our home setting. This is a culturally created environment. And I want us to talk about this because if we're going to have a different environment, if we're going to dream into what's possible, then we need to actually own that we all have contributed in some way or another to either turning a blind eye or modeling to children that their boundaries and their instincts are not accurate, they're not okay, or whatever it was that we participated in. And we don't need to shame ourselves, because I'm really not into shaming anyone. And I'm not into labeling and not into blaming, but I am into claiming. So let me claim, you know, the places that I maybe gone a little unconscious around sovereign space, and then let me contribute to that. And I want to say that even though I had that really violent experience, sometimes I have violated other people's space. I'm French-Canadian. We love to touch. We love to hug. You know, we give kisses on each cheek. And not everyone is raised in that culture. So there has been times when my enthusiasm for greeting a person hasn't been well received. And so I've had to learn culturally to adapt so that I can respect other, you know, what other people deem as a good way to connect. Because it's not always going to be in the French-Canadian style of things.
And I'd like to add something. I've done several virtual summits, and I interviewed someone who was talking about, like, women's sovereignty, women claiming themselves. So she was talking about women dressing very sexy and that the men have no right to touch them. But then I realized that those women may not be honoring the effect that they're having on the men. You know, the man doesn't just touch her. She's also instigating it. So just talk about that a little bit, you know, how you feel about it.
Exactly.
We're intruding on another person's space. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what sexual sovereignty, I want to go deeper into it. So we have a model. What does it look like? The primary number one thing is profound respect for ourselves and really understanding our own boundaries, which are fluid. So say you and I, Erica, we meet up, we really like each other, those boundaries will be a lot more. But say I meet a stranger in a dark parking lot, those boundaries will be very different. So that's very important primarily for me to recognize this deep respect, my own boundaries, and then to take a stand for them. The next piece around sexual sovereignty, if we're going to have a birthright, all rights come with responsibility. You don't have a right and then no responsibility. That's kind of like feeling entitled. There's a responsibility
right.
All our rights, right? So if we want to have, you know, continued great water, we have the responsibility to protect the waters of the earth, for example. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the right to my body, the right to my sexuality, the right for me to choose about my pleasure and how and when and with whom comes with responsibility. And I want to be very careful with what I say here because it's important to understand what that means, the ability to respond, the ability to use your sensuality to make sense of reality. That is what sensuality is actually designed to do. It's for us to make sense of reality. So when we start using our sensuality appropriately, or we're making a lot more sense, we're more tuned in, we're more aware, we're more conscious, then we stop playing the very immature games of needing to get affirmed or have attention or be validated externally by others. And we start to go, here's my beauty, here's my radiance, I'm fully responsible for this beauty. And if a man were to come up in that moment and just go, wow, you know, because it is a wow, women are so spectacular, they don't understand. And it doesn't matter the age, it's the radiance that is so breathtaking. So when there's a wow, we're responsible to actually acknowledge and say, wow, I've had this effect. So I tend to say, thank you for noticing. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know. And the way in which I say that has very clear boundaries, because here's a premise that's very important. We are not responsible for anyone else's turn on but our own. We're not. So if other people are turned on and lit up and switched on, that's theirs. Let them have it. You can have clear boundaries. You can be soft and joyous and firm at the same time. I have been in experiences that are quite scary. I have been at a party where I was followed into a bedroom, and the man, you know, started to masturbate and start telling me he wanted me and that I wanted him. And I looked at him and I said, wow, you look like you're having a really good time. Don't stop on my account, but I am not going to participate. I'm not interested in you or having sex with you or anything to do with this party, as a matter of fact. This is not my thing. But please, you know, don't stop on my account. And, of course, I didn't shame. I didn't get angry. I wasn't afraid. I just stood my ground and said what I needed. And very quickly the energy shifted where he put his pants back on. We actually ended up having a conversation for 3 hours. And it ended up being a very amazing connection. I share this really weird story for a reason, because it's edgy. Because we don't have models of what it looks like to be a powerful woman, fully in her sensuality, fully in her pleasure, with boundaries, without having to use intense anger and rage, or to freeze in terror. There are other options.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone
Absolutely.
Is going to hurt me, Erica, right? But if someone's going to hurt me, now we're playing a different game. So I want to be very clear that what I just described is when people sense and feel my boundary because I let it be known and they respect it. But if a person doesn't respect it, now what? This is now a different rule. Mm-hmm. If you touch me without my permission and you touch me with the intent to hurt me or violate me or anything like that, the rules are different. Now self-defense gets to happen. And I can share with you, Erica, that I have broken a few noses in my life because that's how scary and close it got to being hurt. And so I don't hesitate to really take care of myself. In that moment, when a person has ill intent, then I will do everything in my power to keep myself safe. If that means breaking a nose, that's what it means. So I think in our culture, we're really afraid of taking a stand. And I would rather you break someone's nose and have impeccability with your own body, be able to feel good and not walk away from a rape situation that could have been avoided, but because we were nice, because we didn't want to cause trouble, we just decided to be quiet. I see this a lot, Erica. I've seen even just recently, I was on the beach. This is totally different. There's a woman drowning, okay? She's from Asia. She's drowning, but she's too embarrassed to yell help. Can you believe this? So my husband rescued her, but she admitted to him that she was ashamed to even yell or wave or ask for help. And she was drowning. She would have died. This is very important to understand culturally. This is a socially mandated behavior more for women than it is for men. And I want women to learn. You're going to make – yes, I'm going to let you speak.
No, that's intense. So what is the biggest challenge facing women now? And you were about to say something along those lines.
Yeah, so our biggest challenge, I believe, right now is, one, to claim the sovereignty and to take the full responsibility and to learn what is it like to live my life on my own terms. The greatest challenge is to stop living what everyone else is wanting us to live and start living for ourselves. And this might feel selfish, but actually, when we do that, we start being a person who can contribute so much more to ourselves, to our families, our loved ones, and our community. But when we're living according to everyone else's pre-mandated ideas and ideals, then what happens is we get resentful, we shut down, we get angry, and we're not showing up in our greatness with our gifts. So for all of us right now, a question I'd love to ask the listeners. What is it that you would love? What is it that deeply matters to your heart? And are you willing to take a stand for that? Even if right now it's like confusing and you're not sure and it's scary, even if it's just admitting quietly, silently to yourself, wow, that actually matters to me. That was a good first step. That is a great first step.
And then just share with us what your procedures are. What would you do next?
Yeah.
How do you guide?
Great. I'm really appreciating our conversation. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate.
Good.
So feel free to interrupt me at any point, because I get very turned on when I'm talking to other amazing people. So here's a couple premises that I think are very important. These are part of how I train professionals. It's also imbued in all of my work. The number, they don't come in a hierarchical order, but there are many. There's one that we are all powerful. So I want you to consider that just for a second. If I'm powerful and you're powerful, you do something that isn't okay, how do you think I'm going to communicate if I regard you as powerful and I believe I'm powerful? I'm going to communicate very clearly. I'm not going to wait around and let you know right then and there, oh, Erica, this didn't feel great to me. And you're like, oh,
right.
I'm sorry, I had no idea, right? And now it's a little thing, it's not a big deal, and we can keep being friends, and it's good. So that's a very important premise. A lot of people, because I coach women, I have this great global community of women, it's a membership group. Probably the most difficult thing for women to really take on is that we're all powerful. At some point, you will regard either your partner or your child or your coworker or somebody as powerless, and you will keep your truth from them. And that, I think, is a disaster for good relations and for integrity and impeccability. So we are all powerful. Very important thing to contemplate.
Well,
the next
but
one
also,
is that we're not...
Oh, one go second.
Ahead. Go ahead.
We can also not share our strength with someone we think is more powerful than us. And we may think they're more powerful, but they can learn from us. They could benefit.
Right. So when I say that you're powerful and I'm powerful, there is no less or more power. It's like saying to a lioness, right? Be more of a lioness. And she'll look at you and go, what are you talking about? I'm just a lioness. Like, for me to say to a woman, be more feminine. How can that be? She is her own unique feminine essence. She can't be more or less than that. She is that. We are powerful. We can be more or less powerful. This hierarchy of power is an illusion. It's not true. Either we are all powerful or none of us are powerful. So I prefer to play the game that we're all powerful. I find that much more entertaining.
Yes, that's
and
great.
You make a big point, because for a long time we have believed that we're not powerful and that other people have power. And so that's one of the things I think the Me Too movement is now inviting us all into, is to question this socially mandated idea, because it's just an idea. It's not necessarily true. It becomes true when we behave as though it is true, but it also becomes untrue when we change ourselves and our orientation to power.
So just go on with the principles or the order in which you work.
Yeah. The next one that I really love, that's very important, and I think for you, I'm really curious how this lands with you, because I'm pretty sure you have this as a premise in your work. But I really believe that none of us are actually broken, so we don't need to be fixed. When we go through an experience, that experience is there for us to grow and learn from and to actually access more of our genius. But it's not, some experiences can feel so big and so heavy and so intense. And many people treated me like I was broken when I was, you know, in the early stages of recovery. But I wasn't. So here's what happens when we believe that we're broken. It sets us on a path to perpetually fix ourselves. And imagine for a moment, if we're not broken, we don't need to fix ourselves, then we can get curious. What else is there? What is this opportunity that I have right now to learn about myself? And what's amazing about that is I witness the majority of a woman's energy, instead of creating the life that she really desires, instead of really going for what matters to her heart, she spends most of her time trying to fix herself because she believes if she fixed herself, then she could have all the things that she desires, all the things that matter. But there's no end to the cycle of fixing. Yeah.
And to go another step further, she's also trying to fix her partner, fix her child, fix her parents.
Yes.
Fix everybody.
Yes, because that's the orientation that we've taken on. Everyone's broken. We've got to fix them. But imagine if we didn't view people like that. Imagine if you went, because I train also gynecologists. Imagine you go to a gynecologist and you have an imbalance. And when you walk in, one of the first things she says to you is, you're not broken. And we're going to work together to help you with this. Can you imagine what that would feel like in your body, where your doctor regards you as powerful, where your doctor wants to work in collaboration with you so that you're healthier and stronger and come back to a place of balance? Wow.
Yes.
It sounds odd, but actually that's what's possible for all of us right now. That's what's possible.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a few more of these principles? They're powerful.
Yeah, aren't they? Are they fun? Yes, I'm going to share one more.
Yes.
I think this one is it's more for women. The last two can apply to men and women equally. This next one I'm not sure because I don't work directly. My partner coaches men, but my practice is with women. And this specifically addresses female genitalia. So there's a word that I use to refer to the female vulva is yoni. So the statement is, your yoni never lies. And what that means is when your genitals, when this part of your body goes into an imbalance, for example, vaginal dryness or vaginal wall thinning, or a yeast infection, or a bladder infection, or whatever the imbalance is. There's a psychosexual piece to that. It's not just purely physical. And so when you contemplate, my yoni never lies, then instead of being angry and feeling betrayed by your body, which is what most of us do when we have imbalances, we lean in, we get curious, and we want to find out, what is it that you're saying? What are you saying to me? What do you need to feel better? And we partake in the healing experience instead of shutting down, shaming ourselves, and making our genitals the enemy, which can happen a lot, especially when things feel like they've been around for a long time.
Let me add something here,
please.
Because I think it's crucial. I think the word for the male organ is lingam. I forget. I haven't looked at this in a long time. But that message is exactly the same for men. Your sexuality, your arousal, your erection, it never lies. So men who are having a problem with impotency or ejaculating too quickly are experiencing something not working correctly in their life, and it's showing up in that particular situation. So if they do what you're saying, the same thing, which is very hard for men to do. Listen to your body and find a
And if we're honest, if we're really honest, the first step to healing a physical imbalance in the body is to recognize how betrayed we feel by our body. It's really important. If we can't recognize that we feel actually afraid, then it's hard to move forward. It's hard to move forward where we want to listen, where we want to get curious, because betrayal hurts, right? It's like, ow.
Mm-hmm.
It really hurts. And so I have found for myself, when I can admit that I feel betrayed by my body, then there's a greater wave of compassion that comes in and curiosity. And those things are key ingredients to coming back to a place where we feel healthy and expressed in our lives.
Wow. So we're running short of time, but I'd like you to tell us about the Daring Project. And just tell us what you have, you know, coming up or available, and how you help, and how people can contact you.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to, Erica. So a few things that are happening. One, this is, again, just only for women. I curated it that way, so it's a safe place for women to explore the full facet of their lives. It's called the Daring Project. It's literally a community of women from all over the world. So all walks of life, all ethnicities, cultures, backgrounds, all women are invited. It's a space where you matter, your story matters, and your voice matters. It's a space where we get to practice being daring. And daring is, Erica, I really believe daring is a key ingredient to counter the incredible effects that apathy has had on our culture. And we need to dare, and yet we're not sure how to dare sometimes. So it's an incredible community. It's a platform to help women exercise that daring muscle in the micro moments, in the little moments, day-to-day of life. And that you can find at thedaringproject.com, thedaringproject.com. And that's the main place to find me for everything.
Oh, that's cool. And do you work privately with women? How do you work? Just share a little bit about that.
Can you repeat the question?
Do you work privately with women, or are they mostly in a group?
Yes, so fantastic. So here's what I've done. I've created 7 online courses because I know that this work isn't just for the area where I'm standing. This affects women's lives all over the world. So I wanted the information available to everybody. So I created 7 different online programs addressing all kinds of different needs and issues that women might have. I have one book called The Emergence of the Sensual Woman that's been amazing for transforming lives. I have a free book called The Illustrious Jade Egg. That one, women can get incredible resources at thejadeegg.com. So they get the free book. There's tons of educational videos. It's just a really great space to explore on your own. And then I do have a course online, but we do it live together once a year. That's coming up in April. And that's called Jade Egg Mastery. And then I do work with live events with my advanced students. We go to exotic places like Hawaii and Costa Rica and Africa, and we explore more advanced topics. And then I do have VIP packages that I offer to those women who really want to dive deeply into this work and have a full journey where they're supported one-on-one by me.
Wow. It sounds beautiful, the work you're doing. And I hear that you have a new book that will be coming out.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. Maybe I can come back and talk about that. It's basically the title is Desire. It's Desire. And this is for men and women. It's for everybody. It doesn't matter where you come from. And it's exploring desire as an emergent, powerful, trustable energy, like a compass, your own compass that you're dialed into. What happens when that gets hijacked and what to do about it. So it's a little pocketbook. It's a very edgy book so far. Everyone who's pre-reading the book for endorsements, they're going crazy over it. So it's getting great feedback, and that will be available in a few months from now.
And I have heard, it sounds exciting, that if you desire something, the universe will provide that for you if you go toward it, that just the fact that you desire it means that it's possible.
Yes. So one of the things I believe strongly is that the things that really matter, we're not just talking about a piece of chocolate, but the things that really matter, that deep ache, that deep yearning, for me, it's almost like the visceral expression of your soul calling you forward and meeting your life, mm-hmm. meeting the mystery of your own life and discovering that greatness. And so that's what I want to invite more people into, because recently we've been vilifying desire, and yet it's the very thing that can help us transform the world that we're currently living in. So I'm very excited to bring that book out to the public.
And I would just clarify in here that the desire of men who are abusive or people who are abusive, that's not coming from the soul. That's coming from a disconnection. And it's
yes,
not
and
their
most,
deeper
yes,
desire.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So
and so I actually address
that's
that.
The quality.
I like to address, yes, it's important to look at what I call our hijacked desires. It's these things that we culturally have been mandated to want and need, and it overrides a lot of our cognitive abilities at times, you know, even just the desire to want a new car, and then we work so hard, we get sick and we ignore the people we love, et cetera, to get this one thing, and then we get it and it's not that fulfilling. Most times with sexual abuse and these things, it's not actually desire for connection and desire for pleasure. It's something completely different. Either the person is resolving their own sexual trauma, or they have for themselves something else that's happening. Addiction is never the thing that the person is doing. If you're addicted to heroin, it's not because of you love heroin. It's something else that you're trying to resolve. If you're addicted to sex,
absolutely.
It's the same thing. You're resolving something else. So it's very important for us to get a clear idea on desire. Yeah.
All right. So do you have any final words for the women in the audience, you know, before you leave?
Yes. I do. And first of all, Erica, I just want to say how much fun I've had speaking with you. And I love your curious
you.
Mind. I love you're just very generous with your heart and your space. So thank you. And for the listeners.
You're welcome.
For the listeners, I want to invite you just today. There's two little things I want you to explore today if you're open to it. One is remember that your sensuality is how you make sense of reality. So today, notice which of your senses feels very dominant and acknowledge that, but then also look at which sense is your most unused one, and maybe there's a way to enhance that. And so spend the day, instead of numbing out and dulling your sensuality, spend the day seeing if you can enhance it and notice how it connects you a lot more fully with your environment, with yourself, and with life. So that's kind of the first one. But I want to invite everyone, men and women, to practice conscious sensuality. And then the second one is practice daring. So for today, is there something that really matters to you? That really matters in your heart? Maybe you've never thought about it, so maybe start there. Like, what matters to me? Maybe that's a good place. But if you have something that matters, I want you to just take a little dare to write it down, or maybe dare a little more and share it with someone. So that's what I'd love to leave you with, a little more sensuality, a little more daring, and just this great sense of that you are an incredibly erotically intelligent and sexually sovereign human being, and you get to discover what that looks like for yourself.
Wow. Thank you so much, Saida Desolate. Your wonderful insights.
My pleasure. It's been a great joy to be here.
And to those of you listening, I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Contact me at drericagoodstone.com, and I can help you to overcome your blocks, create love, request a love mastery session, or just contact. Bye for now.